what the people want.
Carl, are you listening?
So them a call us pirates. Them a call us illegal broadcasters. DTI try stop us, but they can't.
Hey, welcome to the Interracial John Podcast. I'm your host at Leslie Mack, and I'm joined, as always,
by your lesser half, very white guy.
And you are very white indeed.
Indubitably.
Yes. How are you today?
I'm good. I wish it were Friday, but I'm good.
I know, right? Friday is coming. It's coming.
It's coming.
Tomorrow.
Soon come.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. If you are just joining us for the first time, you can find us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Just search Interracial John. That's J-A-W-N. You can also find us on our website, interracialjohn.com. And of course, we're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr. Just search at Interracial John, again, J-A-W-N.
In case you are listening for the first time, first of all, thank you. We appreciate it. John, that's a word we Philly cats use to mean anything and everything. That's my John.
That's my John. Clove used it the other day on Facebook. I was cracking up. He's like, that's my John. Yeah, it was really great.
Yeah.
Shout out to you, Clove. And Shirley.
Clove.
Chonella Podcast.
I've never asked him, does he pronounce it Roy or Wah? He's got to pronounce it Wah. That's the Canadian way, right?
You'll have to ask him.
Clovois.
You'll have to ask him about
that.
I'll inquire. We also love to get reviews, so if you like the show, or even if you don't, we don't really care. Just review us on either iTunes or Stitcher.
Wait a minute. If you don't, I'm not saying, like, okay, listen, for reviews to be valid, there's got to be, like, critique. I invite critique.
Sure. Fine.
Like, Amazon doesn't, like suppress the one letter views. You said if you don't like us, we don't care. I mean, I wouldn't.
No, I mean, I don't care if they don't like us, and that's why they write their review. I care if people like us. I'm just saying, but I don't care. You liking or not liking us should not preclude you from leaving the review, is what my point is.
Okay. I just want to make sure we weren't pandering or.
But we want 5-star reviews. And we'll read the 5-star reviews on the air. That is a nod to the great Rodimus Prime from The Black Guy Who Tips.
And you know what? I'm sorry. I know it's kind of our show, but if you fucking hate us, don't leave a review. Just don't listen. we got enough hate. If you fucking hate us, just turn us
off.
But
I'm saying, if they have like a suggestion, though, they can put that in there.
Yeah. Well, you said you don't care. So, all right, you're right. Okay.
So it's not limited to, you know, just all praise is what I'm trying to say.
I'm with you.
You want to say.
I invite critique. I'm
say
the
whatever
first
you want.
To be, hey, you know, be critical of me. I welcome it.
I would not say you're the first.
Why? You don't think I invite critique?
No.
I don't think I handle it well, but I invite it. There's a difference.
Okay, I guess.
There's a difference.
If you say so.
See, you're biased. I don't particularly care for critique from you because I get it all the damn time, but I take it.
You could give me less to critique and then that'd be better.
Oh, stop. Stop.
Oh. Stop it. All right, well, let's get the show.
Less to critique.
On that note.
The news is coming on.
Yes, in the news. January has come and gone. We're in February here. I'm, you know, first week of February this week. And, you know, the website Killed by Police has been logging people that have been killed by police. They just started keeping this database because no governmental agency keeps this information, nor is it required to be reported to any governmental.
That's correct. You always write everything, but there was a law. There was government mandate, but nobody did anything. And then the requirement that mandated the collection of this data was allowed to expire, I think, like 2004
I have
or
to
six.
Correct you because what the law allowed for was the government to ask for it.
Okay, right, fair enough.
So there was no law that forced them to do anything.
Fair enough. But even the bill saying we can ask for this, they let that expire.
Yes,
so now we're having, you know, like real news is coming from citizen journalists and live streamers and Twitter. We have a group of individuals, killedbypolice.net, which is, I think it's right. And it's just a straight up spreadsheet.
Yep.
You know, with links to
the stories and when they're able to get the information, they
and I'll say the name and the age. We're the Interracial John, but, you know, and our mantra is Black Lives Matter, but white people get killed by police as well. And they're cataloged on that sheet as well. It's not just people of color.
No, I mean, the police are just killing people.
It just happens they're
of course,
know,
they're killing more black people.
They're better
than
at it. They're better at killing
they're
black people.
They're focused on black people, but I'm just saying, like, they will kill anybody. Okay, so anyway, you have data from both sides. We've had, like I said, a month under our belt, so to speak, for this year. So I'll let you decide which info you want me to tell you first. How many police died in the line of duty in the month of January, and how many people were killed by police?
Well, I know the killed by police. So how many cops? Let's do the law enforcement.
Okay, so January of 2015, line of duty deaths nationwide, 13 of them, 5 by automobile accident, 3 heart attacks, 2 struck by vehicle, 1 9/11 related illness, 1.
Wait a minute, okay, I'm sorry. Go on. I don't even know what that means.
That means that they got a like lung cancer? Disease or something like that that's been attributed to the 9/11.
And that's
incident.
One of the 13 that's in the line of duty?
They were in the line of duty when they got injured.
Okay. And were they active? Was this a police officer that was retired? Active?
Well, I don't know.
Okay, go on. I'm sorry. Go on.
The point is that they were in the line of duty when they, whatever the action that ended up in their death. Okay. To give you the answer to that. 1 accidental gunfire.
Shot himself.
And 1 vehicle pursuit, which is different than struck by vehicle, just to say.
So I just want to make sure I understand this correctly. These are 13.
13.
And this is sort of like, you know, if we're having like a one side of the equation, this is the other side of the equation. The other side of the equation's data set includes people that died of, I would say, ostensibly natural causes, heart attacks, people that died in like OSHA-related accidents, vehicular. Someone who, it sounds like...
Well, no, that's not OSHA-related. They were struck by a vehicle, like a person they were trying to catch might have hit them, for example.
Okay.
Vehicle pursuit. They were pursuing someone in the act of doing their job.
Fair enough. But the heart attack and the 9/11-related illness, that I know I'm not trying to be like shitty to police officers, but if we're going to have a comparison, and you and I have talked about this comparison, for me, the data set on this side isn't had a heart attack on the job and got 9/11 related cancer and died. The data set is a black man took my gun and shot me. A person, you know, a criminal or somebody in the, you know, tasking of my duties, pulling somebody over, you know, frisking, whatever it is, I'm killed through criminal, direct, negligent, like homicide. And am I correct or is that number in January 0?
Well, there were 0 officer deaths from gunfire in January of 2015. That is a fact.
But of the 13, were any of those deaths like, and I'm not trying to make like, you know, be like difficult, but like, I guess if you're in pursuit, that counts, I guess. But
listen, let me tell you something. All of these deaths of the police officers count. I know that you're trying to say that it was natural causes, but it's not. Because that's like saying that Eric Garner died because he was fat. It's not the case. Someone's bad heart is a contributing factor to their death, but if they have a heart attack while they're chasing somebody, or if they have a heart attack in a scary position that their job has put them in, or if they have a heart attack because of whatever is happening around them, I would just say for me personally,
okay,
that is considered in the line of duty. They're doing their job.
Let's go this way. I'll count. We'll say count all. It's fine. 13 deaths in January. Fair.
Correct. 13 deaths. And I said 0 officer deaths from gunfire in January of 2015.
I'm always, the thing that I'm thinking of is this fear that people of color, black men in particular, are going to have a gun, pull a gun, attack a police officer and shoot a police officer. And from those 13 you read, it didn't seem like any of those were that type of incident.
As I said, 0.
From gunfire.
Officers were killed by gunfire in January of 2015.
And I know the data on the other side. Hit us with the number.
91.
Fuck.
So 91 people were killed by police in the month of January alone.
And were those all by gunfire?
Yes.
Wow. So you could. So then now that number is 91 to 0. 91 people were killed by gunfire by law enforcement officers, and 0 law enforcement officers were killed by gunfire in the line of duty.
Mm-hmm.
Gee, and you know, I remember a bunch of people were, and again, we'd have to go through the numbers, except 91, I know it includes, there's a white woman in Texas that had suicide by cop. There's definitely...
Listen, I did not say that these were unarmed deaths. I was just saying these people were killed by police. I'm not saying that none of those people were justified shootings or anything like that. I'm not talking about the the specifics of the 91.
I was thinking,
make that clear.
I was thinking more of the statistic that is used frequently every 28 hours. That statistic was specifically drawn regarding people of color. And there's been some debate whether it's accurate, this or that. You know, so fuck every 28 hours. This is every, like, 7 hours. What's a third of every 8 hours?
I think it's like nine or something. We were talking about this on Twitter last night.
Every 8 hours?
On Tuesday, 4 people were killed by police in the country and all over.
Yeah.
St. Louis had another
Ladarius.
Death. Oklahoma, just outside of Oakland, California, and Georgia. So one day, just that one day. It's crazy. Anyway, so
there was you're saying Tuesday.
That was Tuesday.
There was and maybe do you have the page up? I swear there was a day that the number almost hit double digits, like 7, 8, or 9 people. There was a day I remember. There was a day with 6.
I'm sure. I'm not saying that was the biggest day. I'm just saying that that's what happened. Yeah, and it's I curate the Black Female Lives Matter Tumblr. And so I had, unfortunately, another name to add because one of the people that were killed on Tuesday, the woman that was killed, her name is Yvette Henderson, in Emeryville, California. It's just on the border of Oakland. I couldn't find her name anywhere. So I knew that a woman had been killed, and I knew I needed to figure out who she was. And I'm not kidding. I mean, it was like an hour and a half. I was scouring everywhere to try and find. They would just, every report would just say, woman killed, the woman died.
Yeah.
The woman died on scene. Deceased woman. Literally, they didn't even have, like, she didn't even warrant the journalistic work to find out her fucking name. Anyways,
someone complained a little bit earlier about lifting up these incidents and voices. It's gratuitous. It's, you know, why is all this? And like, you've said it, and I know you'll reiterate it. It's not like we fucking want to do this research.
I wish I didn't have to spend a fucking
hour and a half trying to find the name of, you know, say her name again, please.
Yvette Henderson is her name.
Yvette, you know,
it's a 38-year-old mother of two. The police claim she had some kind of weapon. They have not said what the weapon was.
Of course.
People on scene say she had none. She was unarmed.
And, you know, we're not going to talk about our podcast. Because I talk about the White Privilege podcast. But the woman that killed, his name was Robert in Syracuse. Same story. You know, her name was all over the place. She gets off for vehicular manslaughter while drunk. And I had to go through like 12 articles in 15 minutes to find Robert's name. Mm. The individual that was killed.
Well, speaking of individuals that were killed today, marked what would have been Trayvon Martin's 20th birthday today. And, you know, always somber, you know, to just think about that fact that he would have been 20, you know, just really, to me, always hits home how young he was to think 17. That, you know, and then also the marking of, you know, the time passing because, you know, it's been 3 years, and so that's really sad to just think about that and what he could have been doing and everything. But anyway, so there obviously people are talking about it. It's been talked about online, and there was a I Am Trayvon kind of online action going on, people wearing hoodies and just using the hashtag or having a sign that said, I Am Trayvon. And Goldie Taylor wrote an amazing essay on BlueNationReview.com. Called I Feel the Absence of Trayvon Through My Own Son's Presence. And it really just talks about her son. She talks all about all the wonderful things about him and how great he is. He's always working on something. He always has some place to be, the kind of man that her ex-husband is, and how he has so many of those great traits as well, her son does. And so she says this. She says, today would have been their son's 20th birthday. It has been 3 years since Trayvon Martin, the playful boy with the bright, expectant smile, was killed in a Central Florida subdivision. His death awakened a consciousness in me, and I would argue the country, that even now refuses sleep. I, like so many others, had tacitly accepted the notion that our sons were required to meet a different standard when confronted by police or other people in authority. There is, as almost every parent of a Black boy will tell you, a way to behave that does not guarantee, but we hope, increases the chances that they will make it home. There's nothing respectable about that. There's nothing respectable about a justice system that weighs the merits of your access to it on the color of your skin or the weight of your wallet. Pants sagging or not, there's nothing, nothing respectable about a neighborhood watchman hunting down and killing an unarmed black child. There is nothing respectable about a social contract that demands perfection from our sons. The truth is, my son likely would not have made it home that night either. Nothing about the well-laid, orderly life of Joshua lives would have guaranteed him safe passage. His father taught him to stand his ground. He too would have asked George Zimmerman what he wanted. Why was he following him? You cannot be a good enough parent to protect your children from that. They cannot be good enough boys. As I heard the front door close and the lock snap into place, I covered my face in the blanket and began to cry, weeping for our lost sons, grateful that my son is alive.
Mm. And there was a lot of tweets surrounding the I Am Trayvon that were addressing his mother specifically.
Yeah.
And I love Goldie, but she really, that was deep.
Really deep. I actually, you know, I talk all the time about how the moms, it's always the moms. So I did actually share Sabrina Fulton's words that she posted today, which was, "Happy 20th birthday, Trayvon. I miss you so much. Words cannot express my pain. I will always remember your smiling face and your willingness to always help. Your death has not separated our love. I love you, my son," is what she said.
Mm.
So I shared her words and her poet, and these were my thoughts. The moms. "I'm always drawn to the mothers. Their pain is unimaginable, and then they're forced into the spotlight to fight for justice. No time to grieve, no place to quietly deal with the immense loss. These women did not choose to be activists or public speakers. They did not grow up dreaming of spending their lives shouting for justice and freedom. They didn't start their families thinking one day they would have to start a foundation in their child's name or speak in front of the United Nations. They had their children and wanted to love them and watch them grow up and enjoy a fruitful life. I can't imagine how difficult these days are for them when they can't escape the 'what would he or she be like now' thoughts, when the marking of the time since they were stolen is impossible to ignore. Sending my love and support to Sabrina Fulton on this difficult day."
Hmm.
It's just, yeah, I just always think about them. So we did do the, I Am Trayvon, which, you know, we had our hoodies and everything. And, as you are apt to, the uniqueness of our show is that I'm black and you're white.
Yeah.
And so in, you know, thinking about what to do with this action, you know, you are always very conscious of what it means for you to participate in an action and what's appropriate and not appropriate for you to participate in. And so you made the decision to wear your hoodie, but to say something other than "I am Trayvon," because, as you so eloquently put it, you could not be Trayvon.
Yeah.
And so what did you decide, just, you know, to let the people know what your choice, why you chose those?
Sure.
Those
I mean, and I, you know, this is it's an evolution understanding, you know, it's a journey. And I saw white people holding up "I am Trayvon." And I kind of understand the desire to be a part of an action and be, you know, amplifying and in solidarity. But I think that there's levels of understanding of one's position, privilege, and sort of, I would even say an evolution of my approach to the work that I'd like to do. From the beginning, it's always been, I speak to and about whiteness to other white people, educating and trying to inform them about systemic oppression. So when you see something like, you know, "I am Trayvon," right? Or remember, "I Can't Breathe,"
right?
And both there, even "I am Mike Brown." They're statements that, as a white person, you know, it just, for me, and I can't say this for every white person, but for me, it really seems inappropriate. It rings hollow. I trust my gut, and my gut right away. And you know, we sat here and we printed out a thing, and I think I might have even taken a picture. And I say right away, I'm like, I can't, I'm not going to do
that. Yeah, you said, I don't want to share that.
I just can't. It doesn't seem right. I don't feel right. And so as I'm often to do, I just wrote about it on Twitter. I said, you know what? I supported the action. I retweeted the call to action, the image, and sort of, you know, here's what we're supposed to be doing. And then I said, I just don't feel comfortable. I don't think I'm going to do it. And there were people on both sides. It's not a problem. You know, you're good. It's not appropriating. But in the end, I printed up I am privileged as one, a hashtag. And then this came from another tweet. I don't know if it was Jesse. I have to find out who it was. Said, I wish Trayvon was alive. Mm. And Jesse, and he's a great guy, Jesse Ben. He's on Twitter.
He is awesome. Hey, Jesse.
He's, like I said, a white individual that really understands his privilege. He wrote, it's hoodies up in my house today, but I am not Trayvon.
Right.
And that's an awareness that, you know, in my tweets when I said this doesn't feel right, I don't think I want to do this, I said, you know, because I'm not Trayvon, I'm very privileged. I'm never going to be in a position where, you know, all of the things that led to Trayvon's death, not a one of them would ever happen to me, starting with being profiled by a vigilante wannabe neighborhood watch guy.
Yeah.
You know, I'm the guy he's protecting.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's never,
you
ever.
You belong.
I belong. It's never, ever, ever. I'm not even remotely close to a situation. So I ended up putting hashtag I am privileged and I wish Trayvon was alive. Because I do. That was from the heart. And then I think when I posted my picture, and then I wrote, and then this hashtag is simply so it's tagged. And then I did tag it, I am Trayvon.
Right, so it was included in
so it'd be part
the
of
action.
Part of the set, but not, you know, being aware that I'm not, and never will be, and won't be in a position to have that happen to me.
Right. Yeah. So that was, to me, that was the biggest news of the day, just kind of.
I liked that action too.
It was a good action, you know. It's always interesting when there's some online stuff that people can do because it really brings. I actually did a store file. I'll put a link to it because I like to at least have a visual place to go to see how everybody interpreted it. Some people, you know, decided to mark it with flowers. Some people had their hoodie and they blocked out the face. Some people did lots of different things. So. And they wrote different things and Dream Defenders, because they literally they were born of the loss of Trayvon. I thought they had their first three tweets today were happy birthday, Trayvon. You would have been 20 today. You changed our lives. Mm. So.
And I agree with that. I would say that, you know, I hope, I really do. It's my fervent desire, hope, belief, and prayer that this movement is going to change the world and people will look back. And I think when they do, in many, many years, you know, I do feel like Trayvon was, I don't want to say the start of it, but it certainly, you know, it's a point, right? It's a zeitgeist.
I remember it was a point. It was like, wow, people are marching lots of places in this. And I also remember the Dream Defenders. They just, up until, even through right now as I'm talking, I'm sure they have an action that they're working on right now. They just had decided that, nope, you know, Philip Agnew was like, we can't just let this go. This has to change. And then if you recall, shortly thereafter, the Moral Monday protests in North Carolina began. And I remember thinking like, whoa, these people, they're coming every Monday. They're not stopping, you know, just kind of this idea around, you know, really civil disobedience and what that could mean in 2014 at that time, America. And so, you know, and then of course, you know, we get to Mike Brown and Eric Garner and John Crawford and, the list goes on lamentably. And so it continues. Mm.
It continues.
Yeah. So, well, that ends the semi-serious. Well, that was actually very serious. Both of those were serious. But, you know, we like to mix it up. We like to make sure we get it all in here.
Yeah. So, you heard about our former state, Illinois, Congressman Shook's having a real bad week.
Yeah, I did see a couple of things.
I saw some
stuff earlier in the week that seemed like, you know, trivial. And then I saw some crazy stuff that broke today, I think.
Well, the Facebook animals thing was today?
Yeah. I thought the story broke today. The incidents weren't, but I think that literally today was when the story broke.
So there's been uncovered a series of Facebook posts allegedly made by, screen captures.
Allegedly. Except for him. And
it's a screen cap by an Illinois Republican senior advisor of a policy and communications in which he made controversial racially charged comments and endorsed gentrification. Rep. Aaron Shock's press secretary, say his name, Benjamin Cole, who is also a former Baptist pastor.
Of course he is.
apparently made several posts on October 13th, 2013, it's a little further back, but still relevant, in which he mocked two black pedestrians outside his apartment in Washington, D.C. One of the messages accompanying a posted video compared the two to animals that escaped the National Zoo. So apparently the closing of the National Zoo has forced the animals to conduct their mating rituals on my street. Gentrify today.
Hashtag.
Hashtag.
You forgot the hashtag part.
Hashtag gentrify today. Part one, because it...
He has three parts.
It gets on. It goes better.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's special.
It's blown up, but the reports, the posts have reportedly since been deleted, but not before some screenshots were taken.
Surprise.
You white people need to learn. That's what she said to me after throwing an elbow at me as I walked by and just before I filed an assault claim against a black female accompanied by four black males and one Hispanic male standing on 14th Street at West Northwest.
Which, stop right there for a second. He just described the scene in which the woman was like, I'm not getting out of your way, motherfucker.
Right.
You're moving out of my way. She elbowed him. He said it himself. And he filed
a complaint.
No. He filed an assault charge, is what he says.
Yep. And then his rebuttal, do you have a problem talking to me? That's what the black Metro Police officer said to me when he began asking me to explain what happened.
Now, let me tell you something. That speaks such volumes, because why would the police officer say that to him? Because you were acting like a racist asshole.
Absolutely. Am I a trigger?
You think
is my black face going to make you
out
freak
of the blue,
out?
The first thing that cop, every time he walks up to me, are you okay talking to me? He's like, this guy just said the N-word three times, so are you all right talking to me, or do you want to talk to somebody else? I'm not saying that's what happened, but if you talk to that black cop, we should get him some. Somebody needs to talk to him and find out what the hell happened that day. Yeah, so the thing that happened earlier in the week was way funnier and not nearly as serious. But I do want to mention, wasn't that other thing a press secretary as well with Sasha and Malia? We should call the president and the first lady bad parents because they were scowling allegedly.
I'm not sure, but I do.
It was a press secretary. Let me just say something to every press secretary out there. Look here, your literal job is to be the voice of the person that you represent. That's it. It's the only thing you do. You don't do research. You don't make policy. You don't help make any decisions. You say what they want you to say and represent them to the public. Of all the people in somebody's cabinet or staffers, all of those people, you are the only one who should know that you can't say, post, or write stupid ass shit that's gonna come back on you.
Like, your job is the...
This isn't an intern or the guy that, I don't know what, like the bag man, or what do they call them?
You
body
know what,
man.
You know what, though? You do this to me. I'll reverse it. You always do this to me. You know, you're acting like this is a problem. This is clearly the representative, Shock, is okay with this. He hired a racist because he's a racist. There's no other explanation. You don't think like, oh, this press secretary stepped out of line and didn't know what he was doing. No, Aaron Shock fucking hired this dude.
No, my whole thing is
man.
Not about the racist part. Because, I mean, not to say it doesn't have any bearing on my argument, because I'm talking about their job. What he did was he hired somebody who's incompetent.
Yeah,
that
too.
Is something else.
That's true, too. That's
and
true
that's
too.
What I'm talking about.
You know, and
to me, it's like, okay, somebody associated with a congressman said this horrible thing. The press secretary?
Nah.
Like, for real? It's egregious.
I'll say this. Do you know how many people I know that don't have anywhere near, like, in terms of the job, like, where your responsibility is being the, like, public face of an individual, much less a politician? Like, put that on, like a 7 out of 10, and, like, you shouldn't be fucking around on, like, social media.
Right.
I know people that are, like, a 2 out of 10. They're like, nah, I don't do nothing on social media. I got this secret account that nobody knows about. Like, you can follow my cat, right? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, they're smart enough to not be like, here's my name and some fucking, you know, whatever I'm going to do and say that might get me in trouble. And I'm not talking about racist shit. I'm talking about, like, drinking, you
right.
know, partying, whatever it is. They're just like, hey, listen, my job ain't anywhere near, like, on the 1 out of 10. It's like a 2, but I'm still worried enough about my job and my employment that, you know, if you really want to, like, hear me fucking, like, use the F word and say other jokes, follow this account. You know what I
right,
mean?
Right.
And, like, this dude's just... stupid. You're right. He hired an incompetent press secretary.
Very incompetent. Mm. So the story that was from the earlier in the week was about Illinois representative Aaron Schock's office.
And I felt like we should get a cue up of music of like designing women or something. But
yeah. So Washington Post had a story about this office that he had redone. He's coming into office. So the title of the article is "He's Got a Downton Abbey Inspired Office, but Representative Aaron Schock won't talk about it." Okay. So the story is funny.
That's the greatest sentence.
The story is so funny on so many levels because it really, especially in light of what happened later in the week, is such a peek into like, literally, we should have our dog run for Congress. I think that Beatrice could win, and I think she could do a better job at putting together an actual administration to run anything than these fucking idiots. Okay, so he's decided that he wanted to have this Downton Abbey structured
office themed,
exactly. So it's got bright red walls and gold colored wall sconces with black candles and a federal style bull's eye mirror with an eagle perched on top. That's just the outer office. Okay, so.
And just, first of all, Downton fucking Abbey? Like, mm-hmm. Yeah. Really? That's what you're going with?
Yes. Anyways.
I'm going to run for Congress and be like, this is my roots themed office. This is a problem.
Right.
Like, what the fuck?
So this was a bold room. I'm just reading from the thing. But the confidence was a mirage, for on Capitol Hill, caution is king when it comes to the micromanagement of one's image, even in the case of how a congressman decides to decorate his office. And sometimes a friendly outsider can inadvertently ruin a communications director's day. So anyways, a woman named Ann Brawler, who is an interior decorator with a company called Eurotrash, she is the one who did the design of the office. So she was pretty excited, like, oh.
Wait a minute, pause. What's the name of her company?
It's called Eurotrash.
But make sure we get this complete. He has a Downton-themed Abbey office that was designed by a woman whose company name is Eurotrash. Mm-hmm. Right? Okay.
Yeah. Just making sure. The Downton Abbey is from her. She says it's actually based off the Red Room in Downton Abbey. So the woman's like, oh, do you want to see the rest of it? And so the reporter's like, yeah, sure, let's check. They'll check it out. This is fucking awesome. It's fucking red. It's red. It's awesome.
Where was his communication secretary? Uh-huh. Should have been there stepping in.
So she introduces herself as the interior decorator. She takes him into the private office, and it's another red room with dripping crystal chandelier, a table propped up by two eagles, a bust of Abraham Lincoln, and a massive arrangement of pheasant feathers.
Come on.
Then my phone rang. It was Schock's communications director, hey, Benjamin Cole.
To the rescue.
And he says, are you taking pictures of the office? Who told you you could do that? Okay, stay where you are. You've created a bit of a crisis in the office. They don't have a fucking clue what a crisis is at this point. If they think this reporter taking pheasant photos is a crisis, and 2 days later, you are going to be out for having called two black people on your block animals. Okay, dude.
I think really, that those posts on Facebook, he did it to himself.
It's from last year.
I know. I'm saying he leaked it out. Like, oh shit, everyone's talking about Downton Abbey.
Oh, you mean he committed Harry Carey.
He committed Harry Carey. Fell on the sword. Yeah, absolutely. Oh shit. But maybe he's less inept than we think. He had that in 2013.
Yeah, you're right.
He toggled it from private to public.
Yeah, you might be right about that. Let's go through the rest of the story because you might be right as I look at this now. So he comes over and they start the interior designer and the congressman's and Benjamin Cole start kind of arguing about it. I want to quote the article again here where he says, Washington has always been more Veep than House of Cards.
Does that make him Tony Hale?
Pretty funny. No, this is the reporter says that about this whole entire thing.
Makes his press secretary
so apparently
Tony
Schock, he's only 33. He's one of the rising stars of the Republican Party. He has six-pack abs that's landed him on the cover of Men's Health, and he raises a shit ton of money, as hence by the pheasant feathers. So he's on Instagram all the time, like hiking across glaciers and tangoing in Buenos Aires, duck facing next to Ariana Grande, apparently. So the reporter's like, why is this a crisis? This dude is like super showy. He raised a shit ton of money.
For real.
Everybody fucking knows it. Like,
he's on the cover of magazines.
Yes. What is the problem here? Like, take it down a notch.
The problem is it's embarrassingly ostentatious
and
gilded.
But the thing is, they were manufacturing this story is being written right now, because I'm telling you right now, the author, whose name is Ben Terrace, was not going to write about this. He actually was going to be writing about the interior designer. It was nothing to do with the congressman. That was his original, like, when he first got access and he started snapping a few pictures, he was going to talk about, like, you know, the designer, where she's from, blah, blah, blah. He didn't know what the story was going to be. And then this idiot turned it into the actual fucking story. Well, so stupid.
I can honestly tell you, even if the Washington Post author had intended to write about the ostentatious nature of Schock's office, if that had been, if Ben Terrace like, I'm going to fucking blast Rep Schock's office for being a joke, if that was his intent, the number of people that would have been known, aware, the virability of it on like a 1 out of 10 would have been like a 2. The moment the press secretary says you've created a crisis, it's on like 7. Literally, the moment he called him and said, you've created kind of a crisis. Dude's a reporter. He's like, oh, I have. Mm-hmm. It changed everything.
It changed the entire thing. You're
a fucking idiot.
So
maybe he is incompetent.
He's incompetent, but got pushed into falling on his sword. I don't know which. So anyways, I don't even want to spend that much more time on it, but long story short, he comes in, he's like, you know, I don't know why, you know, you have somebody, a member of Congress who's willing to talk to you about other things. Why are you going to sour it by writing a gossipy piece? And he's like, gossipy piece? I just am talking to the goddamn interior designer.
For real.
And Brailer, who is the interior designer, she's like, I'm happy to talk about my work. I don't know why Ben is being so prickly. She's like, I met him in his district. She's from his home district. It's like he was impressed with her work, which he'd seen in some magazines, and said if she wanted to come and do his office, and bam. Because they only get bare essentials, apparently. And so furniture and computers are handed down. But new members can do whatever they want, pretty much.
And do they have a budget, though? I feel like there's a budget. There's something.
They have a small budget. They have like 4 colors they can choose from. And the House provides for that. And like I said, the general computers and furniture, basic stuff. But any additional decorations come out of the lawmaker's pocket. So the woman, Brailer, offered her services for free, okay, but he had to just pay for the objects, obviously, because she wanted to get the story written about how she did the freaking office.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so she then, they're like, they don't want him, you know, the Cole says that the congressman hasn't even seen the office yet. He didn't think it would be fair for him to write an article about it before before he'd seen it. And so,
stop it.
Ben, being the very good journalist that he is, says, I get that. How about I hold off until the congressman has seen the office, and then I'll write the story then. They agreed to do that. And then I'm going to quote again from Ben's words.
Dum, dum, dum.
Cole agreed, and we reached the Red Walls Accord of 2015. That is until Schock decided he wasn't interested in doing a whole story about how his office was decorated. Cole called him back and said, he's happy to talk to you, just not about the office. I'm really sorry. I want you to know this is not fun for me.
That's what his press secretary said?
Yes.
He's like, I can't decide if he's a fucking brilliant genius playing stupid or just really plain stupid. It's like.
And then he called him back a second time to say, to just talk about the relationship between Schock and Downton Abbey. I don't even know if he watches it. I don't know what shows he watches, but I don't think he watches good TV.
He had to call a second time to explain.
Wait a minute, I don't know.
Just because his office is a fucking mirror image of the big med red room in the Downton Abbey, I don't know if he's a fan of the show or if he watches
the
show.
Funny.
Maybe he DVRs the show and watches it Thursday morning at 6 a.m. while he works out on the treadmill. I don't know. I'm not sure. I really don't know. Maybe he's got period costumes and dresses up and role plays with his wife and goes on cruises. And the whole cruise is a Downton Abbey theme cruise. I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't know. It's unclear to me, but we're not going to fucking talk about it.
It's really, really
funny. We're not going to talk about it.
So anyway, Ben did snap a few photos, so you can see them if you go to @bterrace on Twitter. It's pretty funny. He put up pictures of the wall sconces and the black candles. And then after the story came out, he wrote, "People want to see more. People want more photos from Shock's office. Here are the pheasant feathers."
I honestly, thank you, Leslie. I needed that laugh. I remember this coming out. I remember like reading about it, but I did not know the ridiculosity. And I really, there is a distinct possibility that the press secretary could have made those Facebook, because you can do that. You can make a Facebook comment and toggle its visibility, and he could have had it be private from 2013 to whatever, and then toggle it to public and be like, you know, somehow like a sock account, somebody else calls attention to it to draw attention away from this incredible snafu of his own making.
Yeah. And apparently there's some sort of like, they don't want people to think that he's gay.
Which one? Shock or the secretary?
Oh, I didn't think about that. I guess that was the...
Why? Because of Downton Abbey?
I guess there's supposed to be some sort of like weird thing.
Downton Abbey's gay?
Oh, shit. Breaking news here on...
Oh, no. Live on the John. Why?
Live
no.
on the goddamn
no.
John.
No. What's happening?
Aaron Shock advisor resigns over the <Richard Shock.
laughs> Shut the fuck up.
55
shut
minutes ago, it just happened.
Shut the
oh, my
fuck
God.
Up. I'm telling you, dude.
I'm extremely disappointed by the inexcusable and offensive online comments made by a member of my staff. I would expect better from any member of my team. Upon learning about them, I met with Cole and he offered his resignation, which sure. I have accepted.
Wow. You know, and we've talked about this before. I'm changing my opinion on, you know, the overzealous glee I enjoy when racists get like scorched and shit. It just doesn't really do anything, you know, firing this. I'm not saying it doesn't do anything. It makes
me
happy.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't
change systemic racism.
No, of course not. We're not talking about systemic racism. We're talking about these idiots.
Yeah.
These two idiots.
He deserves, regardless of the racist comments, he deserves to be fired for being inept.
Just dumb.
Just stupid.
Speaking of dumb.
Comcast. So I want to say her name, Mary Bauer.
Hi, Mary.
Mary Bauer of Addison was having some issues with Comcast, had them technicians out to her house, admittedly numerous times, but hey, you pay for a service, that's how it goes. And let's just play, there's a news clip I want to play about Mary's issues with Comcast.
Okay.
Well, for the second time in a few weeks, a Comcast customer has received a bill with a nasty insult on the address line. This time, the customer is a Chicago area resident. WGN's Eric Rung is live from the newsroom.
I gotta look up the first one.
Eric.
Hi, Micah. Mary Bauer says she's been a Comcast customer for close to 5 years, but it wasn't until about a year and a half ago, after upgrading her service, she started having problems with her cable. She admits she called several times trying to get it fixed, even got angry when her cable kept crashing on her. Still, she says she can't believe Comcast would resort to calling her names. The owner of this one-story Addison home welcomes everyone who comes to the door.
My personality is nice.
That personality, as well as the home, belongs to 63-year-old Mary Bauer. She says the first thing she does when she gets home from work is flip on her TV.
I watch Lifetime, Hallmark, TCM.
The glowing
like Mary.
You see tonight, brought to you by Comcast, took months, Mary says, to finally get on a consistent basis. Her cable, she says, continually kept shutting off, and she had to keep calling to get it fixed.
I had 39 technicians in this whole month, from November all the way to April.
Someone along the way, Mary says, finally got it right, but then she says her bills stopped showing up 4 months in a row.
I was even nice enough to call them to ask them how much I owe.
She says she pays every month.
You didn't call them names?
No. Mm-mm.
Didn't swear at them?
No. I was a little hot. I was angry at them. Because I never got good service.
Not an unusual reaction, but when Mary got her bill today, well...
When I came home at lunch, it says, Super Bauer, this is a disgrace to me. A disgrace.
Yeah, it is.
Super bitch Why Bauer.
Why are they doing this when I pay my bills?
Exactly.
The word we beep starts with B, and you can probably guess what it is. The bill, by the way, was still sealed.
I do not deserve this.
Just a couple of weeks ago, a couple in Washington
I like
got
how they
a
said
bill
it was
that
still
was addressed
sealed.
To a you know the rest,
Asshole Brown.
All they did was try and cancel their service. In Mary's case, Comcast says they are investigating the matter to determine the facts. Mary says she already knows the facts.
And I'm not going to open this bill either until they send me a new one with my name on it.
Good for you, Mary.
And I'm not going to be quiet about Comcast.
Good for you, Mary.
Everybody not to get Comcast.
Go ahead, Mary.
Yeah.
That is the shittiest thing ever.
You know, you hear about it, this happens like, it seems like two or three times a year, someone at a fast food restaurant or somewhere has a receipt or a bill that gets some, you know, their name is typed in inappropriately, but like super.
It's so shitty. And it's so like, especially because now they had Asshole Brown and they had been trying to cancel their service. And that's why they got called assholes in the system. And it just shows you the corporate and company culture that's fostered there. It's completely indignant. That is not, this is not, somebody does not go rogue and type that in, except for that it's something they've seen other people do and is completely acceptable there.
I think, and this is my hypothesis, that there's different screens and different pieces of information.
Like the technician was making a note and it went into her actual record or something like that. But the point is you shouldn't be making notes that's regardless.
My hypothesis is that there's an internal and then there's a like external.
Yeah,
like,
that's
address
what I mean.
And I think that two incidents have escaped externally by accident. Like, oh, I tweeted my dick pic and I meant to DM it, right? You know what I mean? Like, you send the wrong...
Let's not do that.
No, but the wiener, right? That was his fucking excuse.
Oh, you mean Anthony Weiner. Yeah,
you're making him... You know, it's like, okay, I can see what you did. It meant to go one way and it went the other way. Not that it's right. I think that's an... Just like with Weiner, I think this is an indication that their internal culture... I think there's thousands of people tens of thousands
probably
of people.
Probably so many we wouldn't
a
even...
A percentage of them. Yeah,
probably
absolutely.
Most. I'll say that. Okay. Anyways, enough about that. Something else happened. Somebody had to make
Speaking of NBC, right? Because didn't Comcast NBC?
Yes, but Comcast is NBC.
They're having a good week. I know what you're playing.
We fell in love. Remember the time. Well,
we love you, MJ.
Brian Williams does not remember the time very well.
If you could see my side eye right now in this podcast,
it's tough. The side eye is tough. Let's give a listen to this report.
I'm not sure that if I had been shot down in a helicopter, I would not be able to remember that.
I made a mistake in recalling the events of 12 years ago. I want to apologize. I said I was traveling in an aircraft that was hit by RPG fire. I was instead in a following aircraft. We all landed after the ground fire incident and spent two harrowing nights in a sandstorm in the Iraq desert. This was a bungled attempt by me to thank one special veteran and by extension, our brave military men and women, veterans everywhere, those who have served.
Well, he was trying to do something nice.
I hope they know they have my greatest respect and also now my apology.
I think it hurts Brian's credibility. He's had a pretty good record.
Pause it for a second. And I don't mean to go tangential, babe. But so what was that? We've had an unpology, the no apology, and the what's the other one? Unpology, no apology. We gotta write these down.
Unpology, non apology, and the no apology.
This is new.
This is the gratuit apology.
Because
he's he's like, I'm apologizing, but really, y'all, I'm the best. What's up?
There's gotta be a better portmanteau, like a side apology.
I don't know what
like
it was.
Like the praise-pology, something.
Praise-pology, yeah.
It was like, it was an apology, but it was like, I don't know where that went. That was really fucking weird. I'm sorry, go back to the report.
I was really trying to be the best guy in the world.
I'm sorry I'm
fuck
a fucking asshole, but look how great these
look
other people are.
Awesome, I was just trying to do the best thing possible. Right, here we go.
It's definitely a blemish on his record. Remains to be seen whether this affects his career. NBC is not saying anything currently.
Surprise.
And he has apologized, of course, but I think some people believe that the apology actually made things rather worse because he seemed to minimize the import of it. It's a strange situation because he says the fog of memory led him to misremember the fact that he wasn't in that helicopter that was shot down. He's talked about this in different ways over the years. Shortly after it happened, he seemed to remember it correctly.
Suddenly, without knowing why, we learn we've been ordered to land in the desert. On the ground, we learn the Chinook ahead of us was almost blown out of the sky.
And then
blown out of the sky, huh?
Sort of changing his tune later in blog posts and then on David Letterman's show in 2013.
Two of our four helicopters were hit by ground fire, including the one I was in.
Credibility is so
key. Including the one I was in.
His explanations have even deepened his problems, I think. I think this will mount. I mean, he has a lot of veterans that are very upset with him, which is the reason this story came out. And
of course.
And I think this will be very difficult for him to ride out.
Impossible.
You know what?
It's interesting because he, more than other news anchors, has tried to display his comedic side. He goes on The Daily Show and Jimmy Fallon and
he was hilarious on SNL.
Really funny on SNL.
Obama don't want none until you pass bills, hon.
I don't know that will directly affect his what his culpability for this kind of incident, but I think he's maybe more broadly known to viewers than just as a news anchor, and to what degree that influences reaction to this, I don't know.
So so the thing about it is, subsequently, just talking about the reason why any of this even happened is because Stars and Stripes, which is a military focused newspaper, interviewed first the Chinook crew members, and they were like, yeah, see, he wasn't anywhere near any of us, and this incident did happen. Three copters were in formation over the desert. One of the helicopters was hit. The three had to land. The thing is, Brian Williams was not in any of those three.
Exactly.
He was in a separate set of helicopters that arrived an hour later. They were told they had to land because these other helicopters had already landed, so obviously it was hostile territory. However, he wasn't anywhere near any of them. So the reason why he even had to say, yeah, this happened, is because a journalist from Stars and Stripes magazine was like, yeah, but see, what had happened was, I just heard you even last Friday during NBC's coverage of a public tribute at a New York Rangers game. He repeated it again. He repeated it again. And so the apology just seems kind of crazy to me. So anyways, that's the story of that. But of course, because Twitter is...
Girl, please.
Sorry, yes. Girl, please. That's
because
crazy.
Twitter is Twitter, the hashtag Brian Williams misremembers.
And did he really use the word misremembers?
Yes, he did use the word misremembers.
And did I hear the Stars and Stripes reporter say fire versus RPG? Because that was the one thing that said RPG. And I thought, even in my looking at this, that it was like small arms fire.
It was small arms fire, but I think where it hit, it definitely downed the vehicle, but they were able to land it. It wasn't like it was.
So to be clear, a formation of helicopters,
none of which included Brian Williams.
took small arms fire, which is capable of downing an aircraft.
Absolutely,
the one was damaged. All three landed.
Correct.
Because of this incident and this area being quote unquote hot, Brian Williams, an hour later, came in and landed and rode out a sandstorm for 2 years.
Two days.
Sorry, thank you. 2 days. And from that, we've heard someone got hit with an RPG versus two
got hit,
including the one I was in.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah.
And that's a misremembering?
Misremember. So, let's just go through a few of the ones I thought were pretty funny. This is from at the Ryan Parker, says, and then he said, let there be light. And I put my hand on his shoulder and I told him, the light's pretty good. Hashtag Brian Williams misremembers.
What, like he's God? Is that what that's supposed to be?
Well, God said the light, but Brian was there. He put his shoulder, his hand on his shoulder. So Tom Shilui says, and I remember how proud I was when I heard my daughter went into acting. Hashtag Brian Williams misremembers. Karina Pearson Katrina Pearson. I discovered relativity. Einstein was looking over at my notes. Hashtag Brian Williams misremembers. And then people started, of course, that's my footprint with the footprint on the moon.
Sure.
I'll never forget that day in July 1969. Neil Buzz and me landed on the moon. Brian Williams misremembers.
You know what this reminds me of? And
this one time in Mogadishu, Brian Williams misremembers. I tell you what, those chariots got great mileage.
Don't stop.
So I told Left Shark, don't worry about the choreography. Just go with it. Just talking about the halftime show this weekend. Damn, those tablets were heavy. Brian Williams misremembers. I said, Martin, do you dream? He said, yes. I said, well, tell the folks your dream. Brian Williams misremembers.
All throughout history. I love it.
Yeah.
And that's one of my favorite things about Twitter. And I would say that, I don't know if this particular was Black Twitter, but
this was all Twitter.
All Twitter. But when this individual, Sean King, took it really well and in stride and had a lot of self-deprecation.
I gotta pull that hashtag up again next time I need to laugh. The best thing ever.
And what was it? His hashtag was... Think on that. Think on this. Think on, what was it?
Think about it.
Think about it. Yeah, pull it up right now. Because what is it?
I don't remember it. But anyways.
He did the same. He made some sort of like, it wasn't obviously the same thing. Right. But he had made some mangled tweet that was like, you know, making a weird correlation between events that were totally unrelated.
Yeah, it was think on this.
And think on this. And all dang day, you know, it's like something really random and my mom's, you know, somewhere else. Think on this. Like just really hilarious stuff. And this reminds me of that. Except Brian, I do... As a journalist and a really big one on NBC, fucking nightly news, like, let's just be serious. Like, Brian Williams' name is in the same paragraph as, like, Walter Cronkite, fucking, you know, like, really big names have led the evening news. I'll say this. There has probably only been 24 people that have led one of the three major networks' evening news programs since the dawn of television. We're talking about a list that includes only a couple dozen
men. Sure, Walter Cronkite.
That's what I just said, Walter Cronkite. And let's say this.
Dan Rather.
That is exactly the name I was going to say.
Peter Jennings.
Dan Rather got kind of drumbeat out.
Yeah, he did.
Of journalism.
Yep.
And it was a little bit, I wouldn't say more egregious. I don't know. I don't remember everything. But he took a... individual that turned out to be false and ran with it as a story without doing, you know, more of his fact checking, this or that. And he got drumbeat out of news, right? He's off the fucking air. Mm-hmm. This seems like a lot worse, man.
Yeah. It's not like we'll see what happens, but anyway.
Yeah. You know, also
don't trust with Brian Williams.
Well, and you know, this shit never bothers, white dudes. Fucking, and not that it's as big a deal because he's not a runner, but fucking Paul Ryan, when he was VP, misremembering his marathon time as being like 2 hours. Guy. Like, really? Your marathon time's like 30 minutes over the fucking Olympic record? Are you sure about that?
He has somebody else run that for him.
I mean, no, I think he just was trying to sound good.
He just doesn't even know. I think even that whole story, like, people gave him way too much credit. Like, he was trying to. He's like, he didn't even know. I'm telling you right now. Like, he was like, oh, yeah, 2 hours, whatever. How long's the marathon? He's an idiot.
I'm going to say this. I'm a runner. I have not yet run a marathon because I got plantar fasciitis. I can fucking tell you every minute, my best mile, my best 10K, my best fucking 15 miles. Trust me, you know it. That's bullshit. If you run and you run a marathon, because you can't not know it. In terms of training for a marathon,
and that's my point. My point is exactly that.
That's what I'm saying. He made it up. He lied. Or you say he didn't run it.
You know, I'm just saying. I don't think he's a runner, so I'll just say that. I'll leave it there.
Sorry, not sorry.
Sorry, not sorry.
So, speaking of fucked up shit, did you hear about Sherry Shepherd and her surrogate?
Well, I know, like, that's been, like, crazy. Like, she just basically decided she didn't want that baby because she divorced her husband, right?
Yeah. So her surrogate gave birth 5 months ago. Her name's Jessica Bartholomew. And so she just, it's weird. She doesn't understand how she can do, there's a quote from Jessica. I just don't understand how she can do that and act like this baby is non-existent, the 32-year-old mother of two said during the interview. It blows my mind. She's a hardworking mom. She's dedicated to her son that she has now. So you have to be dedicated to the other son. And again, this is the surrogate talking about it. And she's saying that since that Shepherd wasn't there during the birth of the young man's name, Lamar Jr., it ended up with Bartholomew's name being listed on the birth certificate as the mother, which has impacted her, obviously, financially.
Wow.
And she says, it's affected me a lot. I'm now listed as a non-custodial parent in California. I have a little child support case coming against me now. And because Shepard doesn't want to be a part of the baby's life, I have to pick up all the slack with my name being on the birth certificate and non-custodial parent, medical bills. I'm still considered the mother of the child that's not mine.
That is some crazy shit, man.
It's kind of fucked up.
It's so cray.
And so at one point, I guess, even in the game, the same interview, there was an offer of a settlement that was maybe $150,000 on condition of...
To the husband.
Yes.
Right.
But again, on condition of not being listed on the birth certificate.
Right, that was what
that was
wanted.
The buyout.
Right.
I'll give you $150,000.
But that ain't so my baby.
I ain't never fucking given a penny and being held accountable for this baby. Never, no more. And who cares about the money? It's like, how can you do that?
It's just nuts to me.
You know, and I had a conversation with a tweet today about us, you know, just in general, being child-free by choice. And I don't know. It's strange to me. This is bizarre. And one of the things when you and I talk about, you know, I don't mean to overshare about being child-free by choice, but for me, I know that it would drastically change your and my relationship.
Sure.
And I love what we have. And it's selfish. And when I hear people say like, oh, I didn't know what love was until I had this child and I would do everything for my child, I feel like, dang, how'd your spouse feel? That's kind of fucked up. But I get it and I understand.
No, of course. I say that all the time. Like, I think if I had kids, that's all I'd fucking talk about. You should be talking about your kids. You should be all about your kids. I'm about that.
So I don't see how you...
I just don't have any.
Have one, surrogate or not surrogate.
It's so and be crazy. Like,
yeah, Kanye shrugged.
Nah, forget it.
You know.
Oh, that baby we had thought about and went through extracting my eggs and paid somebody to carry.
Nah.
Never mind. That's crazy.
That's you.
Speaking of really crazy.
Uh-oh.
What the heck is going on in Argentina?
So, yeah, Argentina is kind of going through some really crazy fucked up shit. But I'll just read a report. In Buenos Aires on January 18th, Alberto Nisman, a government prosecutor, was found dead in his apartment, shot with a .22. The death, either a suicide or a murder, has rocked Argentina politics. One's opinion on what the killing means depends on one's opinion of the country's president, Ms. Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner. Nisman, who had spent years investigating the 1994 bombing of the Argentina Israelite Mutual Association, the IMA, which killed 85 and wounded hundreds, has accused Kirchner and her foreign minister, Hector Timmerman, who is the son of Jacob Timmerman, one of Argentina's most famous victims of the Dirty War, author of a couple of books, on conspiring to protect Iran and, by its nature, Hezbollah, from being held accountable for the bombing. He accuses Kirchner and Timmerman made the deal, according to Nisman, in exchange for cheap oil. Nisman's accusations are contained in a nearly 300-page report released just before his death. He was going to give testimony before Congress the very next day, but died before his appearance.
Okay, stop there for 1 second.
Mm.
Because, honest to goodness, the rest of the story goes so fuck nuts crazy. Like, if I hadn't lived in Argentina, I would think that they were lying.
Yeah.
Honest to goodness, if I read this, I'd be like,
for real.
These reporters are crazy. There's no freaking way that for this real. Actually happened.
Because, absolutely.
Because honestly, I'm not even willing to say that he was murdered or not murdered or who murdered him or what happened, because the level to which the complexities that are involved in this, the Mossad is involved, the CIA is
absolutely.
Involved. It is so fucking crazy.
And I want to just say right now, when all you motherfucking right-wing nut jobs who never listen to this podcast, it doesn't matter, but when they fucking come with this freedom of speech and they don't know what it means, freedom of speech, they talk about consequences of their hate speech or this or that, but when we talk about freedom of speech, I'm talking no I Lopez, no I nunca más, right? Sin Lopez, sin nunca más, right? Or sin Lopez, no I nunca más,
yeah.
Right? So in Argentina, like, they fucking kill people for speaking about shit. That's fucking, when you're talking about freedom of speech, they be fucking straight up murder motherfuckers. But I'll keep reading here.
So, no, I'm saying don't, because I'm not even kidding. Like, it gets so complicated. And the long story short is that nobody fucking knows what happened. Nobody knows what happened with the bombing for a multitude of reasons, including the insistence by Israel and the United States CIA that Argentina only focus on Iran. So let's start there. So the actual information that Nisman could have about the bombing is like
skewed.
It's not just skewed. There's no, it's rambling. It's impossible to decipher. And truthfully, there's no judge was going to bring any charges because you, the distance from it and the lack of information about what actually happened, it there's no way that you'd be able to decipher what occurred. Yeah. And a lot of things go into that. A lot of really fucked up things about the government go into that part.
The reference to the dirty war, and I don't know if all of our listeners know, but you know, we're not talking very long ago, like 30 years ago, the 80s, they, in political strife, would literally capture individuals, you know, like black bag ops, take them from their homes in the cover of night, kill them and drop them into the Rio La Plata, which is basically an ocean. It's enormous. You would never find the individual. And thousands of people disappeared. Am I exaggerating, right? Thousands. And it's like so much worse. They didn't just individuals disappear. They would then take their children. Right. So imagine the two factions.
This happens to all the men. And honestly, I don't think it's an appropriate subject to be talking about because we're not that well versed in it. And it's controversial and people feel very strongly on both sides. Nobody was right. It was called a dirty war for a reason.
Okay, so fair
enough. Let's stop talking about that.
But the purpose of me saying that, when I say like in Argentina, people don't even want to like you. Almost don't talk about this shit.
No,
it's hushed tones. Like you want to talk about freedom of speech?
It's not just hushed tones. It's just very difficult. It's very
dangerous.
Fresh. It's raw. It's a very it's just fraught. Well, and so when I tell you, we'll put a link to the article, and you'll read the whole thing, and you still
have
not you, the audience.
Oh, sorry.
Will have no clue actually happened because there is no information that. There's no way of sussing out what actually happened. I'm sure, obviously, this has gotten some quite a bit of attention, both in Argentina, obvio, and also outside of the country. So I think that there'll be a lot more to the story that comes out to try and really figure out how he died. But it really just a lot of things about Argentina I loved, but a lot of things about it baffled me, and this you know, the bizarreness of everything associated with this story is a really good illustration of all the things that baffled me.
Because
it was really, sometimes, you know, you live in a different culture and there's always a difference of culture, so you have to deal with that. When people come here, they have to deal with, you know, lots of things that have to do with being American. So this type of thing where it's so malleable in terms of, you know, a lot of times there's not a lot to hang on to. You don't know what people are really talking about often. And I'm not just talking about language barrier. I'm talking about just clarity. And part of that comes with freedom of the press or lack thereof.
Sure.
So anyways.
And we'll talk about that later about there's a correlation between like, you know, hey, where's this thing? And you get this vague, like, well, you know, there's a desire not to be clear on things as a cultural, you know.
There's an idiosyncrasy, I would say.
An idiosyncrasy, yeah. Well, so we do have some friends and people. We were in Argentina for many years. And I reached out and I said, you know, hey, you know, this is, we obviously get the skewed American press, but, you know, like,
What's going on? Right.
And I'm not going to use the individual's name.
Yeah,
but I'll just read it. And it says, and really, what we just talked about, I try to know as little about that kind of thing as possible.
You have to say quote, because this is not you saying this.
Yes,
now.
Quote.
This person.
I try to know as little about that kind of thing as possible, but the guy, meaning the prosecutor, was in charge of investigating the AMIA case, a 20-year-old terrorist attack against the Jewish establishment. He was sent to present findings. He was set to present findings the day or so after they found him dead from an apparent suicide that doesn't look like a suicide at all. Everyone becomes a forensic expert in a story like this, but it would seem like he was killed and it was made to look like a suicide. They, and he puts in quotes, say he was going after the president next, and I heard the guy who is replacing him is supposedly going after her son and has requested protection. I don't know how much of it is really confirmed, though. The government is doing all kinds of weird things to draw attention elsewhere. The President Kirchner held a press conference dressed all in white and in a wheelchair. Some other ministers tore up a newspaper calling the media crap in a speech. Very grandiose things like that. There's been a bit more protesting and a bit more anti-Kirchner sentiment in general, but it doesn't look like it will go much beyond that. Somebody needs to tell Netflix that they could do an Argentinian version of House of Cards that would look like it had been filmed by Tim Burton on mushrooms.
That is the best.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Tim Burton on Mushrooms might be the name of the episode.
Tim Burton on Mushrooms?
That's awesome.
He's already on Mushrooms.
No, but for real, that's such a great descriptor. I couldn't even imagine a better way of putting it.
And, and we've talked before, but I absolutely love the people, you know, the people of Argentina are phenomenal. But you'd, and it's not too far ago, 50, 60 years ago, it was a world power.
Oh, yeah.
It was a very, it was like one of the top five.
It has, I say all the time, resources. It has incredible natural resources. Social, it has an educated populace. It has a well-formed government. It has one of the highest percentage of women in not just leadership roles in terms of business, but also in terms of the government.
They were one of the first countries to pass an LGBT equality status.
Yep.
They're one of the first countries to nationally legalize marijuana.
Yeah.
Like, they aren't just like a little bit. Hey, let's be honest. We lived there.
Yeah.
And it was like people like, oh, socialist healthcare. Like, we got LASIK eye surgery for free.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I know you can like bitch about like you think this or that. Like, and you know, okay, maybe this wasn't as good, but it was pretty goddamn fucking good in some ways, in many ways. And they should, like you said, all those factors, educated papas, blah, 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 blah. They should be much, much more, but they have, I hate to say it, this government that's an institutionalized shoot yourself in the foot policy. It's, it's just, you know, 2001's economic, was 2001 where they defaulted on their sovereign debt? They did what Iceland did.
Yes, 2001 it was.
Greece almost did.
Mm-hmm.
And rather than doing like a bailout from the euro and austerity measures, they just defaulted. Mm-hmm. And they've never recovered. And it's a shame. It sucks. Mm-hmm. I feel bad. Argentinian friends, shout out.
Yeah.
Be strong.
Well, let's talk about some good Argentinian stuff then. I actually found some really funny articles about Argentina. Yeah.
I do. And I like it. I love the country. I love the people. It's
phenomenal. I think we need a palate cleanser.
A musical intermezzo, if you will.
Yeah. Ooh, Juanes. I love Juanes.
So do I.
He's from Colombia, though, not Argentina.
He's huge in Argentina, in South America.
As he should be.
And this song was too.
And he's hot.
Si su pareja le dejó, tengo toda clase de brebajes, plantas medicinales, las he traído desde muy lejanos bosques hasta aquí. Soy hierbatero, vengo a curar su mal de amores, soy el que quita los dolores y habla con los animales. Dígame de qué sufre usted, que yo le tengo un brebaje que le devuelve el tono.
That's good.
In case listeners don't know, he's saying yerbatero, which we would say sherbatero, which is kind of like your medicine man.
Yes.
I'm your medicine man.
Yeah, your medicine man. Yeah, like a witch doctor kind of thing. It's a great song. The video is awesome too. Juanes, shout out. Okay, so I have actually like four things, but I'm going to skip around on them because some of them, you know, apply. So the
I'm
first,
unfamiliar.
The first one comes from 8 things Americans can learn from Argentines.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so how to embrace people that aren't just like you.
Very good.
Yes. They say in Argentina, diversity is embrace gays, no problem. So they talked about all that. Yeah. And then sex changes can be covered under a public or private medical plan, and all it takes to legally change one's gender is to fill out a form, literally.
Yep.
As for foreigners, when taking a taxi in Buenos Aires, they better be prepared for their driver's enthusiastic, never-ending interrogation about their country. The importance of family. There's no way saying that people from the... I'm in no way saying that people from the States don't care about family, but Argentines in general seem to keep family closer. Oh. It is like no joke.
It's for real.
No
the
joke.
Love, man.
Sundays are almost sacredly reserved for family get-togethers, and many kids stay nearby once they finally move out of the house, which often doesn't happen until their mid to late 20s.
Yeah.
Very true.
Very true.
That university education and medical care can be free. How to chill the fuck out.
Okay, and for real, I said this, I was talking with someone that has lived abroad, and I said the 2 years we spent there, on some level, it added like 5 years to my life. The level of stress just daily that you live with is, I can't even describe it. It's almost as if stress were a secret radio signal that the United States broadcasts and you don't know it. And the radio signal is created from fucking advertising and LCD screens and you know what I mean? And you just, it's all of a sudden like you get off the plane, it's like, I just feel different. I feel stressed here in the United States. You just, I didn't feel
an Argentina. It's true. And everything, it's like everything's there was very like something horrible happened. It was like, you know, son cosas que pasan. Like it just happens, you know, who cares? Problem. Whatever. Yafue. It doesn't matter. Like nothing matters. It's already done. Don't worry about it. There are things more important than working.
Oh man. And so, and if listeners don't know this, if you were to look at the list of countries that have the most vacation days, Argentina is number one or two. Mm-hmm. I can't remember which.
Brazil is one, I think. Argentina.
Okay. And then the country that takes of their days they get, which country takes the largest percentage of them? Argentina is number one. So not only are they like number two in getting the most days, they're number one in all taking them. They take their vacation days seriously.
So true, yeah. The thing says, storefront signs I've actually seen since living in Argentina. Quote, we open when we want to open. We close sure. when we close. And if you come and we aren't open, it wasn't meant to be.
Yes, totally.
The other, quote, almost always closed. Which is so true. You would be like, eh, they might be open. I'm not sure. It's so true.
And just to give you some perspective, every gas iron storefront has the metal pull down like security shades.
Yeah.
So you could just literally at a moment be like,
it's done. She had to go do something.
Yeah, right. Like, oh,
the pet store is a really great example. She had no regular hours.
Corvette? Yes.
Yeah. Zero regular hours.
None at all. We had our cell phone. But the, when we say like, you know, things like banks, right? They'd be like, we're out of money.
See ya.
See ya. Closed. Like, what?
Mm-hmm. The awesomeness of hugs.
Yeah.
None of this handshaking or pat on the back crap here. Argentines hug it. And they hug often. They'll give you real hugs, holding you tight and simultaneously kissing your cheek. And it's perfectly acceptable for your mailman or the lady at the supermarket to hug you. Look out when it comes to friends and family. It might seem weird at first, but you will be surprised how soon you get used to it.
Not just used to it.
And he says, upon return to the U.S., you might be surprised to realize that it's one of the things you miss
most.
Oh,
yeah. I miss it so desperately. There's literally like science behind the fact that endorphins are released in contact and embrace with other individuals. And in order you and I know, and we'll tell our listeners, they don't just embrace. When you walk into an office of 20 people, each and every person, as a hello and a greeting for the day, goes and gives a kiss on the cheek and an embrace to every single person.
Absolutely.
And if you don't, it's almost like a...
It's rude.
It's rude. It's like an insult.
It's not almost. It's rude.
It's rude.
It's for real rude.
And there's embraces and men... there's nothing, and so again, they've basically on a legislative basis elevated LGBT individuals to, you know, you cannot discriminate, period. Like they were one of the first countries to quote unquote legalize gay marriage. Men hold hands and it's not even a thing. Like you just, you embrace.
Oh yeah. Like your male friends holding hands is like walking down the street. Totally normal.
And my friend Enrique, when I see him, I get a hug and a kiss on the cheek from him and an embrace that's, It's genuine. There's nothing sexual, but there is an
intimacy.
But not just an intimacy. There's a dopamine and endorphin. That lowers cortisol steroids. It's de-escalating stress. And in order to be able to have that level of intimacy, you can't other people. You can't be your teeth look funny. You're overweight.
Right.
You're black. You're this. You smell. You can't do that and have a level of that kind of closeness and embrace.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of benefit to it. And I do, I miss it greatly. As Americans, we are almost like afraid of contact in that regard.
Okay. So 9 ways having an Argentine boyfriend will change you.
Oh.
This one I thought had so many awesome things. Number one, never again will you ever even think about touching the grill.
True, true.
Because the asador... This is the man, so that's it for that. Actually learn to find it endearing when he calls you a gorda, which means fat in Spanish, but in Argentina, it's like sweetheart or honey.
It's a term of endearment.
Yeah, it's a big term of endearment.
Gordita.
Uh-huh. you begin to question your self-maintenance routine. Not only do you have to compete with the Argentine women who look impeccable in high heels and full makeup at the grocery store at 8 a.m., while it totally crossed your mind to go in pajamas, you have to compete with him. Pretty, pretty him. You start to doubt your own from the shower to out the door in 60 seconds or less routine as you watch him meticulously exfoliate, shave, put on toner, an anti-aging face cream, hair gel, cologne, etc. Those Argentine men, they keep themselves well. They look sharp.
I'd say as a country as a whole,
yeah.
Argentina's like, I don't know what like the hotness scale is, but yep. They're way up there. All of them, men, women, all of them are really attractive individuals.
Absolutely. You accept that your dinner date could actually begin at midnight.
Should. Mm-hmm. Not just accept, it should. It will.
You'll really appreciate this one. It's the last one I'm going to read from here. Number 7, Talos are no longer exotic. They are your new normal. If your boyfriend is on the younger side, he probably still lives at home. An overbearing, overprotective mom looks over her baby's shoulder at every second, makes it a little tricky for you to romp around uninhibitedly with your passionate Latin lover. To save the day is the Talo, a by-the-hour sex motel found in most larger Argentine cities. Less porn and more just plain convenient. You will probably quickly learn to fully appreciate their existence.
The Talo. I fucking love it. Have we talked about that on our podcast?
Yeah, we talked about it before.
I thought we did.
Yeah, we did. Okay, so 10 signs you were born and raised in Argentina.
Let's do it.
You address everyone as if they're family.
Yeah.
You are not afraid to kiss.
No, you can't be.
Number 3 is particularly close to my heart. If you see a car with a plastic bottle on its hood or roof, you know that it's for sale.
The bleach bomb.
Yeah, it's very funny. Nobody seems to know exactly where this custom came from. Actually, I do know, but it's as universal as having asado on Sunday. Argentina remains to me, after years living as an expatriate, a red Torino with a bottle of bleach on its roof. You know exactly what a bidet is for.
Sure. Hey, listen, I'm a bidet convert.
Oh, yeah, you are.
I am more environmental than you because I fucking wash my butt.
Yeah.
I don't toilet paper, baby.
And it says, and damn it, if only they were available everywhere.
I do.
So you've pushed a broken down car more than once. I only mentioned this one because when the Kalers came to visit us, shout out to Jim and Amory Kaler and Lady J, when they came to visit us, I don't know if you remember, but I was in Buenos Aires with them and there was this huge, horrible rainstorm. Like Luciano got caught on the other side of the river. It was, I mean, literally flooded. The entire city was flooded. I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah. And like Jim, feet of water.
Yeah, feet. And Jim pushed a car that night up Uyarte because we were going to get some food to help the guy get it off the road. So I would just say that. Yeah, this is a friend, a neighbor, some stranger in the middle of the highway. You ended up sweaty and covered in grease. But with your new friends, you had the satisfaction of having done your duty to help, which is simply part of the culture. You begin each long statement with Che.
Che. That's basically their version of hello, hey, yes. And it's everything. It's Che. That's why Che Guevara was nicknamed with Che because as he traveled outside of Argentina, yes. He kept saying Che.
It never occurred to you that sharing a mate was sharing germs with your friends.
You know, and I'm going to speak on this. I miss mate, but do you remember when swine flu was going around and there was like really a big deal?
Oh, yeah.
Trying to
prevent
it. It was just all over the world, globally. It was a bit of a pandemic, swine flu. And they made some concessions as a public for society's good. And the concessions were like, every other row in the theater was taped off. So you go to the movie theater and you can't sit like close to other people. Like every other row was closed. They put a caution tape over it and they shut down some other things. Yet every day, like 14 of my office mates would drink out of the same mate cup with the same bombilla, the same straw and pass it around.
I thought it was
six
hilarious.
Times.
They were like, we can only sell half the seats at the movie theater, but you want to share this straw with me real quick? It was hilarious.
I miss mate.
Oh, yeah. So the last one I had, which is 15 differences between a normal friend and an Argentinian friend.
Okay.
So a normal friend asks, how you doing when he sees you? An Argentine friend hugs and kisses you saying, look at you, you son of a bitch. You look amazing. So true. A normal friend may not have seen you cry. An Argentine friend has cried with you a dozen times. A normal friend sends you flowers and a card when you're in the hospital. An Argentine friend goes to see you and falls asleep on a chair next to your bed. I have seen this.
I have seen this. Honest to God, we were it. A friend of ours was in the hospital, got admitted, and I feel like
everybody was just ended up falling asleep there.
We went to visit, and we're like, holy, you've got a fairly sized room, but there's like 20 people in here.
Yeah, and
someone that was asleep, one of his sons, I'm like, have you talked to that? He's like, no, I got here, and he was still asleep, and I was here, and I fell asleep, and then he was awake, and I was like, wow.
Yeah.
The family is, in fact, we lived in an edifice, a building, there was just two apartments. Right. We owned one, or we rented one, and the neighbors, our vecinos that were above us, they folded us in like family, and we spent like Christmas with them, and when we left, they drove us to the airport. We were all in tears.
Yeah. I miss them so much. But we're going to get to see Santi soon. So I'm excited. Yeah, that's going to be really cool.
Where's Mambelga? Where's Santi?
Yay, Santi. A normal friend knocks at your door. An Argentine friend opens the door and happily yells, I'm here. Very true.
Very true.
A normal friend asks if you could please make her coffee. An Argentine friend goes straight to the kitchen, helps herself to the coffee maker, and asking your neighbor for sugar if you don't have any.
Totally.
A normal friend plans a visit a week ahead of time and asks for a confirmation. An Argentine friend calls anytime and says, I'll start cooking in 5 minutes. Bring the vino.
Totally.
When you visit a normal friend, the officer introduces you using your first and last name. An Argentine friend says, man, this dude is my bro. Very true. You'll love this one. If you're going through hard times, a normal friend tells you, I didn't call you before because I wanted to give you some space. An Argentine friend calls every hour saying, boludo, tell me what you need.
Yeah.
It's so true. Boludo means asshole, but it's also a term of endearment.
Is that the last one or is there more?
There's one more.
Okay.
A normal friend could be a friend for some time. An Argentine friend will be your friend for life.
So I'll give another one that's not on the list. It's very Argentinian. A normal friend would allow a dull and boring party to go on for hours and for a guest like on that episode of Seinfeld to sit in your house and to walk out and leave you there. An Argentinian friend would pick up the glass and chime, tasa, tasa, cuál es su casa, which is a it's like a little thing they say, but they like rhyming. And it really just means cup, cup, what is your home? But it's basically The bar's closed. You can't stay here.
Time to leave.
You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here.
And you as the host never have to do it.
Never have to do it.
Somebody else always, like, they look around, they see the food is empty, they see the lingerers are lingering, and they take it upon themselves to get everybody the heck out your house. And it's a fabulous
thing. Lovely.
Yes.
Get the fuck out.
Get out.
Go.
It's time. The party's over, everybody.
And it's just like a what is your home?
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean anything other than get out. Tassa, tassa.
Get out, and I'm not going to make my host do that for
exactly.
Yes, it's fantastic. Yes, of course. Argentina, so we love Argentina, and so I didn't want to leave on that
besos.
Horrible note about besos a todos. Okay, so we're running long, but I know we had some TV stuff to talk about.
Totally. I'm into Gotham. I don't know if everyone's into it as much.
I love it.
But this last episode with Penguin.
The Penguin is so great. It seems like, obviously, this one season is clearly focused on him, his rise, da-da.
Yes.
And so I'm interested to obviously see how that plays out, how big a role he continues to have, and like how they introduce other villains that aren't these villain of the week type villains, but, you know, the Joker,
right,
and the Riddler. Right, I mean, right, Riddler's already on the show, but not as a Riddler yet, and that kind of thing. So
no, when what's his name realizes fish is alive,
right?
Like, we got to go right now. Come on. And you think one's ahead of the other and the step. And he steals. He goes, but they're doing the truth game. Like, now you tell me a secret. You tell me a secret. I've got your gun. And he goes back and forth. He goes, I got a secret. There's no bullets in it. And he, you know, thinks he's lying. Click, click, click. He pulled that trigger.
He sure did.
But that shit was blank.
It was.
Love it. He's I thought a slippery that shit was awesome.
One. I just keep coming back to the fact that penguins eat fish. So if I'm putting my money on anybody.
Penguins eat fish.
I don't think Jade is too long for this world anyways. That's just my personal thoughts on that.
Well, neither one of the three bosses has really, you know, died, right? They're all
but we know in the future Falcone is his city still. So, but who knows? Honestly, I think that they're using backstory, but I think they're also creating a different type of universe. And there's a lot of different strings that go along with the Batman lore in terms of comics. You know, they restart things and redo things. So I think, anyways, I love the show. I think it's fantastic, and I like it very much.
It's very well written. The filming, directing, the special effects. It's just really good show. All around. Good.
Costuming, the whole thing. So I saw an ad for something else, though.
We saw
coming
it,
on TV. Let's see. Here it comes.
No.
I don't want to end up divorced and seeing my kids every other weekend.
Yeah, the freaking balls. Be aggressive on them.
Nine angry coaches.
Coaches reverberate throughout the community.
8 weeks of anger management.
To say, coach, curse me like a dog.
Parking lot. Bring it. Game.
If I don't change my ways, I will end up in jail.
It's time to tackle this head on. I've teamed up with renowned anger management specialist.
That's
Dr.
Ray Lewis,
Kristen
everybody.
Conte.
Every moment you're impacting people's lives, we're going to challenge you in ways that you have not been challenged before.
We're going to take the angriest coaches in America and confront their out of control behavior.
You were the worst coach I ever had.
You black out, wake up, and your hands are bloody. What did I just do?
We have a real chance to do something.
One, two, three, family!
We're going to face the demon of your anger.
Your brother needs you. Your son needs you.
It's okay sometimes not to fight.
Ridiculous sound bites.
What will your legacy be?
Oh my God.
Is that just like giant cliches?
After an all new episode of Bar Rescue on Spike.
Okay, so let me just say this. It's called Coaching Bad, and I'll just describe what they say. Coaching Bad is a new series where nine angry coaches are put through an intensive anger management program hosted by NFL great Ray Lewis,
Stabby McLewis,
and anger management specialist Dr. Kristen Conte. These coaches will travel through an emotional and physical journey to treat their abusive behavior that is ruining their lives.
Now, at least they got a professional. I'm glad it's not just Ray.
Of course they have a professional.
Ray.
But Ray Lewis?
Coaching Bad.
So
what channel is this on?
It's on Spike TV.
It makes a lot more sense.
It's on Spike TV. But they have another clip where they actually talk about why Ray Lewis.
The clip.
So let's listen to that.
But no, but stop for a second. The clip you just played was like, I understand that they edited it for like to be viewed and watched.
Sure.
But it was like a fucking chopped up mismatch of like cliches and sound bites one after the other. Rod did that whole bit when he was making fun of fucking Country Grammar. It was the same way. It was like, what? This is ridiculous. But let's hear the.
So yeah, Coaching Bad. Ray Lewis is an expert motivator.
Is that what he is?
Ray Lewis
or a murderer? One of the two.
If we're not playing football, we're gonna be out there killing.
If something ain't working, you gotta change the play.
Ray's role on Coaching Bad is to do exactly that: motivate the coaches to be better coaches and to be better people.
And let you walk out, because if you fail, we fail.
To me, Ray Lewis was the ideal partner I could have ever asked for.
And he threatened to stab me if I didn't agree.
Being coached from the time he was young, he is so vocal about how much the coaches have impacted him.
I brought a guy here
plus deer antler spray.
Me what being a man feels like. Head coach of the Indianapolis Colts, Chuck Pagano.
When he speaks to the coaches on the show, he's talking about not just firsthand experience, but we're talking about future Hall of Famer. Talking about firsthand experience with these coaches.
You coach now, buddy. You coach now. We trying to throw that angle away.
I couldn't have asked that.
Oh my God.
You coach now, buddy. You coach now.
Oh my God. Honestly.
You coach now, buddy.
Why do I want to watch it?
You coach
now. Terrible. I really shouldn't.
Buddy.
Just to hear him like go through. It's a bunch of coaches like
from like high school.
Yes,
and shit?
From like it's children's coaches that these people that like lose their shit on the sidelines and stuff, and threaten to beat people up.
You're a coach now, buddy,
and scream at their kids at their athletes.
I want that soundbite. You're a coach now, buddy.
That should be your ringtone. You're a coach now, buddy.
You're a coach now, buddy.
If you lose, we lose. What is this? What's that movie with the fire backdraft? You go, we go. What the hell is this? He's just going to be up there spouting some nonsensical ass shit. Eat your vegetables. You got to focus.
Look and both ways before you cross the damn street.
When you focus, you can win. We're going to win together. 1, 2, 3, family.
You got to do your homework. You got to eat your vegetables. You got to look both ways. Then you're a coach, buddy.
You're a coach.
You're a coach, buddy.
You got to leave that behind. And
if
your family
disrespect-
needs you.
If you get disrespected, have your crew stab a man.
1, 2, 3, stab him. Anyways.
Ray Lewis is the best partner I could have worked with.
Because he threatened to kill me if I didn't let him on the show.
The best partner that I could afford.
Well, I think that's it for this episode.
You are making me fucking laugh.
Oh, my goodness. My. I just feel like it's going to have a lot. It's like, you know, that random time we watched Nellyville. It's like, isn't it called Nellyville, the show?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, yes. So that random time.
Was it called Nellyville?
Yeah, no, it was called Nellyville.
With the EI Institute?
With the I, yeah, the oh, EI.
Oh. Wait, it was, you're going to come get a free, you're going to pay me $20,000 for education. You're going to write some beats and then I'm going to fucking record them.
Yep.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Yeah, I feel like this has a lot of that material.
Yeah.
Maybe you should DVR one.
I might need just to see it, just to be like how bad. We could just do like the best of Ray this week. Like that's what I envision. Like I don't actually want to watch the show, but just pearls of wisdom from Ray Lewis.
You're a coach now, buddy.
I wonder if he does the dance in the circle. Like, we're going to coach these kids.
Conspicuously, didn't hear any of his Jesus. Because he's usually pretty like.
Oh, I'm sure they'll bring that in. The dude that's the doctor, he looks like, you know, when Vince McMahon got all like buff randomly?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He looks like that. Like his head is too small, his body's too big. He looks like he's beat up a few people in his day. I want to know what kind of doctor he is exactly.
He's an anger management specialist.
Which reminds me of something. I saw something about Rand Paul. You know how he always is talking about he's a doctor?
Yes.
So I found out that he's not a. He says board certified all the time.
Okay.
And, you know, when I say what a doctor is, when someone says like, oh, board certified, I think that means that, you know.
MD.
Yes. Board certified, meaning the board that everybody else considers the board. That,
okay.
Which would be the American board.
I gotcha.
Of ophthalmology, of whatever the specifics
the
are.
Board within your vertical
yes,
specialty.
But the American board of it. This
I'm
is
with
a,
you.
Okay. So it turns out that he's actually only certified by something called the National Board of Ophthalmology.
Huh?
Which is very convenient because he operates the organization himself.
He runs the National
yes,
Board
it
of
maintains
Ophthalmology?
Yes, a fully staffed headquarters in Philadelphia has existed for roughly a century and currently lists about 16,000 doctors on its rolls. Most hospitals and insurance companies only prefer doctors who are board certified because certification indicates that they have kept up with changes in technology, best practices, and so on. That's the one that everybody knows of, the American board. The National Board has only existed since 1999 when Paul founded it. Lists no more than 7 doctors, and its address is a P.O. box in Bowling Green, Kentucky. He claims to be certified by both, but the Courier Journal reporter Joseph Girth quickly discovered the claim was false. When he tried to ask Paul why he claims to be board certified when he isn't and why he set up the National Board of Ophthalmology, he stonewalled him. He said, I'm not going to go through all of that right now.
Interesting.
What does that have to do with this election? So it's kind of nutso. Just wanted to mention that the National Board of Ophthalmology is what he is quote unquote board certified in.
Hold it. Hold it. Time out.
You just know.
It's crazy.
And you can't like create the thing and then anoint yourself and then use said self anointment as mm-hmm. some sort of like credibility.
Yeah.
Like it's your thing. And I say that all the time with fucking people that come with like shitty facts, otherwise known as shats, right? Like just
right.
ridiculous. And it's like, where'd this come from? And it's like got some like dubious, like, you know, the American Institute of Political, you know, blah, blah, blah,
right.
blah, blah, blah. And it's like,
I think it's officially, I think it's even run by his wife and his father-in-law has something
come
to do with
on.
It too.
Come on.
So, yeah. So just, you know, think about that next time you taking some vaccination advice or something from him. I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah,
I don't even know what his stance is on it. I'm just saying when he throws out the board certified
Rand Paul.
Ophthalmologist, he's not. So just saying.
Well, I think we're about ready, yeah?
Yeah.
Good night, everybody.
High five.